们身体刚好而已啊。
CKLM-FM 88.1 in Toronto. And you're listening to Bob on Air. Bob. Welcome back. This is the last show of 1988.
Thanks, Mike.
Last week we had our very mellow, very sort of down, low-energy Christmas show. I was disappointed in that. I'm hoping this week will be better sense because we haven't forecast what this week might be like, and I think they're usually the best shows.
That's right, when we have no idea what's
coming.
Last
week we had these intellectual deadbeats down, and and nothing came of it.
Zen monks into silence.
Yeah.
With the sound of one station. With the sound of one station off air.
Well, welcome to our final edition, 1988, the Church of the Subgenius, J.R. Bob Dobbs. My name is Michael Dyer. Joining us, Pent Carey.
Again.
And... let's talk, huh?
Yeah, you're all prepared, Mike. He's saying he's not prepared. He's got the year annual report there.
Bad headphones happening here.
Tentatively, yours?
Yeah. No, we won't do the year end fiscal report until 1989.
Okay.
We've got our accountants working on that right now. Well, this is 1986 we started this, wasn't it?
No, 87. It's been a year and a half.
Yeah.
I've been the longest running guest.
That's right.
On any station ever in the world.
In the world. That's good to have you. I guess that's true, isn't it?
That's because I'm the only guest in the world who has something to say. It takes a while to say it. And so I don't mean me personally. I mean me figuratively.
Yeah.
Symbolically. What the electric environment has a lot to say. Incorporate silence. Unfortunately, the people last week specialized in that one aspect. There's many other aspects, including mothing, right?
Right.
So, Mike, if you had something to say, go ahead. But I have something to say if you don't.
I don't. I just came across some really interesting notes. I was going to read you the deposition of Robert Charles Black Jr., but it's all out of context. It wouldn't make any sense anyway.
It just gives you a sense of getting prepared for the show.
It is really interesting, actually, the whole deposition. There's a number of pages, though, so maybe we'll go into it another time.
We'll read one line.
One line?
Like, all right. Peak point.
This is the deposition of Robert Charles Black Jr. In August 1981, and Robert Black is the plaintiff. Carol Tornorth and John Law are the defendants. Where should we begin? The beginning?
Just pick one line out and see what Black says.
Okay, this is in San Francisco.
Page 11. Half of 22.
Yeah, page 11.
Page 11.
11th line.
But maybe it doesn't go that far.
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay. Yeah. And what line?
11th line.
11. Okay.
22.
I was going to discuss regarding your refusal to answer questions. We can follow one of two procedures.
Good one. Excellent. Who's saying that?
This is the...
prosecutor?
Prosecutor.
Accusing somebody.
Well, Black.
Well, that's good enough. Yeah. That makes he's a subgenius. He's in court refusing to answer questions.
We can follow one of two procedures. We can actually have the reporter ask you the question, and you refuse to answer directly to the reporter. One of the usual stipulations among attorneys and parties in a deposition proceeding is that if I ask you the question, the questioning attorney asks you the question, and you refuse, it shall be deemed that the reporter has asked you. And if I'm asking you, you would enter into that stipulation, or if you would prefer that we go through the procedure, No, that's convenient. So you have no problem with that stipulation. That's not in section 2034, but that's convenient. So you are refusing to provide your residence address, is that correct? Yes, for the reason stated. Would the reporter certify that question, please? Your residence phone? The same. And so on and so on.
You just won't tell him who he is.
Yeah, it's civil disobedience in court, I guess.
That's very interesting. That's an important sign of the 80s. I mean, Reagan refused to answer questions, too. So Bob Black, as an artist, was out there performing and miming the zeitgeist,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
not saying who he was and where he was.
Did you want to talk about 1988 in review? Or have we done that already? Well, we did that last week in the middle.
Well, listen, we know the calendars are the drum solo of the electric heliotropical No Time. All right, so I don't think we need to talk about 88. Let's look back at the electronic environment and the effects. You know, let's get into what are the major figures are surfacing and what figures fell away. We get television, we get computers, hidden ground, then it goes into satellite, and then after that it slips into second coming. The popular art form, Club of Rome, and one of the symptoms is the Luddites. And I think Christ comes in here in the church. He comes after Dickens. And we got a manuscript here. Manuscript, yeah, technological art form. And where does semiotics fit into this, Bobby? Come on, Bobby, tell me where semiotics fit into this. Well, I'll tell you where semiotics fit into this. In a computer environment, you know. And then Matthew McCullough says to Bucky Fuller, up your figure, groundhead. Where's the groundhog? And then Finnegan Wake again, he goes, use input only, dope, you are what you were. The planet becomes an archetypal garbage dump, I think. and the popular art user is Monarch. This is just the collections of startling quotes, many from sources reviewed here. and news items where people will be very glad you haven't met. Some are transcriptions of radio broadcasts that would otherwise seem fresh. And it is a quirky dose of wisdom and cooked and combined, never more frequently disgusting with a treat for sickos. And this is page 142. And the lenient Elvis is the popular art form under television conditions.
Ah, geez, that was good. No,
I felt
no,
that.
No, not finished.
Oh, go.
Furry lit. You see, it makes... Okay, semiotics. Mike thinks his headphones are broken.
I'm just checking for furry lit.
Good. You see, Mike knows how to react.
I think I found it.
Okay, we got popular archetype, user is monarch of, it goes tribe, village, town, city, nation, planet, solar system, universe. Now you figure out where semiotics fits into that.
I found it. I found the furry lip.
The liquid they would use it.
The liquid version
and
of
then
furry.
Then you have ghetto dropout. It goes from family, pride, village, town, city, nation, planet, outer space. And then the technological art form, spoken word, manuscript, print of book, newspaper, radio, movies, or TV, black and white TV, color TV, computer, mixed curvy, and mass med. Semiotics. Well, I'd say it's like this, Mike. Since satellite environment was 1977 approximately, and computer sensibility is a rapid transformation leading to many flips and reversals, then the main archetypal process to prove the computer as nostalgic art form in the 80s was President Reagan's flip from originator of World War III when he came into office in 1981, right? He pushed that all the way. Well, you know, he came in 1981. He was inaugurated, baby. All right? So he comes in, say, an evil empire, and he gets everybody going. He puts revitalizes the peace movement, and everybody's worried about Armageddon, and Armageddon does happen. And then the 80s end off with peace in our time. Now, that is a major dinosaur flip, right? That's a major process. And that's computer sensibility, speed up, as an archetypal retrieval. Now, what's the hidden ground of that? What's the hidden ground? Well, obviously, satellite. And the necessary programming for the 90s will be the second coming as figure. You know, where we have in the chart here, satellite is the ground, and then it becomes the art form, so second coming is the figure. That makes me most likely to succeed in the 90s as a surfer of the second coming. Right? I'd like to surf along on it. With a sense of integrity, you know? I should just be able to handle the judgment,
Just surf?
Yeah, surf, baby.
You want to surf on the satellite wave.
I mean, Heidegger surfed along the electronic wave, and Descartes surfed along the fragments. So Bob will surf along the satellite. What were we talking? The Luddites? What was it? Darwin, Marx, Einstein? The satellite environment has been coming. Bob will surf along as Faker. So Bob around. All right, so semionics. You know what semionics is? Semionics is enhancement of sign. Semionics talks about the sign, stop signs, dollar signs, and postural signs, gesture, body language. That's why guys like Arthur Croker, baby, they don't surf very far. Maybe Arthur Croker, hyperesthetics and excremental culture. You know, these kind of things, they just don't pin down the long range. I mean, he is talking about popular advertising hijack semiotics in the 80s. All right, why is that? Because semiotics deals with body language. When did body language surface? Under movie conditions. A movie became art form in the 50s. Therefore, with many retrievals and flips, it's way past archetypal form in the 70s. So what do the academics get a hold of it? They get a hold of movie effects, posture, body language, and they call it semiotics. And that's just because they're dealing with kinetic space, because movies are kinetic space, baby. That's kinetic. That's between visual space and acoustic and tactile space. Kinetic space, baby. It was acoustic space, and then it was visual space, and then there was the tip thread, and then there was Bucky Fuller again as a retrieval, and then there was Reverend Stang, and Andy Warhol kicks a bucket on February 22nd, and 2-2-2. Mike, you haven't even got the mic on, have you, Mikey? Okay, so, semiotics. We got here, semiotics is body language, right? And the movie is long back there as archetypal retrieval squared four times by the 70s. And so finally the academics translate body language into semiotics and put it in the books, right? And Arthur Croker comes along trying to outdo me, and he tries to be a critic. And he puts out a book in the early 80s called Technology in the Canadian Mind or something, you know? And he's just trying to get post-semiotics. But he does not say it. He just knows the body is the wasteland for programmed environments. That's all he knows. Okay? I've had my fill of these guys because they just don't want to talk to me. You know, they just won't talk to me. I mean, I'm drumming to the master's beat, baby. I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to get you. Where's Bob? Did Bob show up? Anyways, I'm trying to get you. I'm trying to get you accuse me, and then there's Bruce Powell, you know, we talk about the solitary outlaw, Wyndham Lewis, Pierre Trudeau, what are the other ones, Glenn Gould, Mercer McLuhan, and, what was the other one?
Anne-Marie.
No, not Anne-Marie, it has to be a man, Mike. What is it, the solitary, only man can be solitary, women cannot be solitary,
Stephen Gould.
Stomp and Tough Runners.
No, there's Gould, Lewis, McClure. Oh, yeah, the guy who wrote about Crowds and Power.
Tommy Hunter.
Kennedy. You don't even know the book, Crowds and Power. No, anyways, Bruce Powell comes along, he writes a review of some book about the boxed-in culture of TV, and he accused the author of still trying to speak to his master and the academics, even though he's obsessed by the popular culture. Well, they make that accusation of me, Mike. And it's not true. I could try to explain it if I felt like it, but I'm not going to. I just put it in simple words. Bob. Bob is the answer to any letters to the editor. All right? Anyway, semiotics is what we got on the topic of concern tonight. You know, deconstruction. These guys, hiking direction, retrieving gesture, and flipping into anarchy. Man, you know, York University, anarchy. It's anarchy out there, you know? You know, these guys, these professors, I could name four of them, but only name two. Bob and Bob, right? There's two, those two out there. You see, Bob's an all-important... I could say, who killed Kennedy? Bob. Who sabotaged fundraising 1984? Bob. Who made Reagan get a third term? Bob. It's an all-purpose term, man. We can't get libeled because we don't know what Bob is, baby. So who do we want to libel today? Who forced free trade on them? Nova Scotia? Bob. Bob did it. And we're looking for you, Bob. We're going to send you to court. We're going to stick Bobby Black on you and his cohort, Johnny Law, because they're friends now, because they settled out of court. Mike read the transcript. They both refused to answer questions.
and they're friends now, and they're working for the Antibob. And I'm not using up space here. I'm just celebrating New Year's.
The world turns and turns and changes the way we see it and represent it through art changes, too. Holography, Xerox art, computer-controlled interactive artwork, and even painting and sculpture are changing, evolving, and waiting. Experience it, Art on Air, every Thursday afternoon from 2 to 2:30 p.m. on your one and only 88.1 CKLN.
Beautiful, beautiful promo. Excellent work.
Mike, Art on Air.
Bike.
No, bike.
So semiotics, baby. Don't study it anymore. Drop out of York. I don't know what I could tell you where
why
to
do you
go.
Mention? Why do you mention York? I'm curious.
Because that's where the semioticians run rampant, baby. Because the U of T won't have truck with that. What do the U of T talk about? They have courses on economics, basically, right? And business administration and fine arts. Okay, so, Mike, change the tone, baby.
Well, who was talking there? You were speaking in tongues, as you do from time to time.
Well, maybe it's a new Bob.
The tone of the voice is very 70s, very
70s. Yeah, you mean the semiotic Bob.
See,
that Bob...
I hear things I recognize. I hear periods I recognize, but not necessarily voices.
Well, that Bob... oh, my God, look at this handsome person just walked in. Come on in, baby. Come on in, man. Bob just showed up. You're not Bob?
Unfortunately not, sorry.
Yeah, he ain't Bob. He's looking good. He looks he's the most handsome guy I've seen.
Does he have a security suit on?
No, but I've never seen somebody look as good as I do in this place. I mean, there's not many good-looking people at CKLN, and this guy is a fierce... I'm shocked. I hope this is a sign of 1989 and the new age, the new being, the new sense of health that we're going to have, baby. Bobby, baby is Bobby. I mean, let's say Baby did it. Who killed Kennedy? Baby did.
Semiotics.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
When semiotics, that's the voice that's evoked. It's an aggressive stance because semiotics was the last-ditch stand of the print people, of the book boys, of the direction-oriented, of the goal-oriented.
Well, you know, the contemporary phrase, when you hear semiotics brought up in day-to-day conversation, it's usually when people are arguing, and they're arguing over a very small point, and then someone will resolve the argument by saying, it's just semiotics.
They mean semantics.
It's semantics. It's semiotics.
Semiotics is semantics revived. Yeah, it's a good point because it's a print-oriented topic, semiotics, and print-oriented people have to have a point of view. They believe in the right to argue and disagree. So I'd say semiotics in the 70s was a revitalizing of the ability to disagree, of having a point of view, because that gives you a sense of direction, especially for Western man. Now, Oriental people don't need. Third world people, right, left hemisphere cultures, everybody off the shore, everybody offshore from North America. They're all, what are they, right hemisphere? They don't need goals, baby, but they need them now because the electric environment, the fourth world's going around, and they put on goals as an art form, as an novelty. That's where Japan's going places. It's hiking the economy. And if anything is semiotics, it's economics, right? Economics is television, and television is computers, and computers is baseball, and baseball is sport, and women are men, and men are animals, and animals are computers, and TV is semiotics, right? So popular advertising sums it up, right? Advertising, the collective abundant image, the abundance of collective images. I don't know, he just keeps coming through, Mike. Mike, you came in prepared, I came in prepared, and we're prepared.
But as usual, we've cut away from our topics of discussion.
But I think that was appropriate that we had that chanting from the Bob of the 70s, mm-hmm. because that was a good inventory, summary of film, of things of 1988.
Was it the Bob of the 70s?
Yeah, somewhere. There's no such drumbeats, but...
The baby coming was probably back in the 70s.
Yeah, the point is it was an inventory summary of themes raised all this year over the 1988 mm-hmm. broadcast. It was a quick run-through.
So it was an 88 mantra of sorts.
That makes sense.
Bob Black also does mantras, too.
Well, he records them and sends them out?
Yeah.
Well, Mike, what do... Do you think we should go into what we foresee for the 1989, or do we go inventory again?
Maybe that would be a good topic for our phone-in segment of the show, Bob.
Someone say goodbye. Just a...
Goodbye.
Yeah, someone just left. Yeah. Yeah, our phone-in section's coming up. Phone-in
555-1635.
What is it?
555-1655 is our number.
595-1473.
People know the number.
Yeah, 1653.
Yeah.
Page 42.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the Hitchhiker's Galaxy, the answers.
Ask for Betty. She'll let you through.
5954. Hey, come on in. I mean, Ped Carey here said when I walk in within 30 seconds, he's confused. Bob has a way of confusing. Well, I'm not trying to confuse you tonight. I'm trying to give you a wrap-up, a sense of where we're going, a perspective even, at risk.
So for all the callers who have called in during our regular phone-in segment of the show, please call in now. If you have questions, ideas, suggestions about the new year and what's up and coming,
some projects for me. Give me some projects. What would you like me to do? What would you? How would I emphasize Slack at our time?
Yeah.
How can we... have a sense of Slack as an incarnate possibility, you know, for all of you. I mean, there's many people who want to know how to make money. Well, I always say your job is to make money for other people. That's mm-hmm. how you make money. You make wealth for other people, and you will make money. That's the slogan for 89. We are going to make money for you.
That's a change, isn't it? That's the subgenius policy has always been, give us your money.
Well, we're in this hyperspace, interval space, where I'm transforming from 88 zeitgeist to 89, and I think we're getting hints of what's coming and what was. You know, what went through in the inventory and what's coming forward. I just feel so eloquent tonight. We have a caller. I bless these callers. They give me a break.
Well, let's go to the phone. Hi, C.K. Allen.
Yeah, roll the individual in 89.
Did you hear that, Bob?
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
well, William Irwin Thompson wrote about the individual as institution in his book, The Edge of History, back in 1971. Well, of course, it's a long time ago. The individual today will have to join the CIA, but there is no CIA, so you got to work with Bob. To be an individual, you got to become Bob. You've got to acknowledge that there is no possibility of the individual. The individual just is, was in the early 80s, a little blip on a computer screen, but we've gone well past that. So it's the second coming. Jesus is coming back, but it's not going to be Jesus, it'll be me. So I'll be handling the court, the judgment. You be with me. You're a baby. You're it. You're an individual, baby. So Bobby, baby, does that answer your probe? Follow me up. Yeah, do it. Follow up, baby. Come on, tell me some more. Feed another question. You're good. You're heavy. You're a drum solo. Cecil Traylor loves you.
Well, how do I reconcile my identity with all this?
Oh, well, no, you don't need to. First of all, you cannot have an identity, right? Now, that's a shock, all right? So you get used to that. Take you about 3 days. No identity, no problem. You still got to go out and buy food and flush the toilet, see? There's no problem at all. So then after you recognize that, you say, well... other people think you have an identity, so you've got to respond, right? So you say, remember McLuhan once said we should all infiltrate the CIA, we should all join the CIA. Well, that can't be done. So we start to impose Bob unity on everybody by saying you're working for Bob. And then when they ask you who you are, say you're Bob. All right? No, don't say you're Bob, that's me. Say you're working for Bob. This guy is a heavy guy. See how I start to erode when we even approach this thing, because the more you people become me, the less I am. So, baby, your identity is no problem. Yeah, I bet you got some other problems that you're afraid to broadcast on the air, because we know who you are, Bobby. Okay, you're a Bobby. I'm Bob, you're Bobby. That's what I meant to say in the 70s when I was saying baby. I was saying Bobby.
Bobby.
To all of you. So your identity ain't a problem. The identity is, the question for identity is, what are the Pinks going to do when we're all talking Bob? Right? What are they?
They're scared.
They're going to think it's the second coming.
Dichotomies when no one has a point of view.
First of all, look, your words, what? There is no such thing as what. There's no reference for the word what. What was his name? What will? There's no possibility of will. Nietzsche blew that one out the window. What will happen? Happenings happen in the 70s and 60s under TV conditions. That's a long time ago. What will happen to political, politics is economics, is television, is advertising, is Bob, is surfaces, for Dickens and Charlie Christ, right? All those things are politics, so that's not a problem. What will happen to political categories, was it? Ideologies? What was the next word?
Will a banker co-opt the ecology movement in your future?
Oh, yeah. That definitely, the bankers have already done that, and we best, when they set up that wilderness reserve, as pointed out in that little obscure periodical called the Money Changer, when Mr. Michael Sweatman, the head of the, Sweatman, head of the Royal Bank of Canada, him and Baron de Rothschild get together and organize that big chunk of land in Canada, Brazil, and all around the world, those wilderness zones, and set up as a kind of collateral for the world bankruptcy situation. Try to pretend you're an animal, and the best way to do that is be with Bob and get on that wilderness preserve, because it's going to be the nicest, safest, acid rain-free zone going, right? So we're with the bankers. Hurry up and make that zoo land, baby. Make that natural park.
All right.
You're doing good, babe. You're doing good. You're not hogging the airwaves.
I got to get out, though.
No. Come on. You could make a statement.
One more question, caller.
Make a statement. What will...
We don't use the word what. Make a statement.
Can you rephrase that for Bob?
Yeah, double duty and terror bang. Do it to us.
Unfortunately, I have nothing specifically on my mind.
Yes, you do. Well, check the other parts of your body, baby. Anything there? Did you get any on you? I'm sure there's a statement on you. Just lie in there. Say it. Just say it. Just go ahead and say it. Come on.
Well, can you speak through me and say it?
No. You say it. I will respond. You say it. Say it. I mean, you know, it's a cop out to say
Pemex
things.
Pemex oil.
Pemex oil. Oh yeah. Okay. That's it. Is that your last statement?
Yes.
Beautiful call. Beautiful suggestion. Pemex oil. Mike. You know what Pemex oil is?
You're going to tell us, are you?
Yeah. Did you cut me off, Mike?
Well, of course not, Bob. Okay. I never cut you off.
So Pemex oil is. Cut off.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, you stop that. Okay. Pemex oil. I'll give the signals, okay? I mean, you know, play me down enough when I signal.
Don't play heavy on me, Bob, okay?
You are a guest, Mike. You are a guest of CKLM. You are given the privilege to get on and use the airwaves for 2 hours and don't abuse it, okay? Now, listen, I am the guest of your guesthood.
But right? I own the station, Bob. Don't forget that.
Yeah, because you work for me, Bob. Right, Bub?
I'm Bubby.
David's laughing. He's laughing in the back. So anyways, Pemex is the company that George Bush worked with. The guy went to jail in the late 70s after the Battle Harvest Moon. The Rockefellers were upset. They threw the guy. I might get serious when I say that this face just drops into this tribal deadpan when I go Battle the Harvest Moon. You should see it. We got to get him on video. It was the Rockefellers lost the whole game, and Bush had to retreat and set up the October Surprise in 1980 just to get a chance back in the White House. But Pemex was the company in Mexico that was run by Bush's associate, a famous Mexican businessman, politician. He's in jail now. And that organization was the one that just so we don't get libeled there. That was the organization that apparently ran the death squad through Oaxaca. So Oaxaca, which is a place in Mexico. Where do they operate?
Yeah.
Around me. I organized all death squads as of 1953. All right? And you know I killed.
Why that particular
date? Because 1953 was when Herbert W. Armstrong got on Radio Luxembourg, sponsored by the Habsburgs, you know, to set up the Gnostic Holy Braille cult. You know what I mean? The true church. The Prince Charles is the returner of the blood of the nice guys that went way back there and suffered under crucifixion. Right?
George Bush?
Oh, very close, very personal, very good friends.
Well respected?
Yes, they respect each other. They understand each other's works and motives. They communicate by ESP through the newspapers using the number 22.
Okay, caller, we've got to go. We have other people waiting on the line.
Thank you.
Fantastic questions.
God bless you.
God bless you.
Happy New Year, Bubbo.
Oh, thanks, Dave. I'll send you the check in the mail.
Yeah, happy birthday.
Okay.
We're rolling. Bring on the next caller.
Yeah, okay. We have questions for Bob. We're talking about 1989, the new year, what's in store, predictions, expectations, and how to make money very quickly and easily through Bob.
Let's take a break, get some calls. Let's put on Reverend Stang. I want to have a Stang break.
Let's go up with the new year with a church.
No, we ain't leaving.
No, of course not.
Yeah, we're coming back. Come on, man. You
got just, another 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, great. It's always 45 minutes now.
Yeah, 10 minutes.
We've earned it.
What are we listening to from...
It's Slack tape, our Slack number 111, according to Reverend Slang.
Yes, so that's what a CD sounds like. Well, this is KNON 90.9 FM in Dallas, Texas, and it's going to miss George.
Yeah.
Really will. don't know who's going to be here next week, but live long and prosper, brother. Go ye out into the wilderness and give them hell, baby. So, it's again.
Welcome to Subgenius.
Psychology, baloney. What Bob's talking about is the eternal slack force of this planet. And it is
that is great stuff. Let's just send that out. That's excellent. Excellent work by Stanker. That was made after I... Listen, no, that was done after I visited him and corrected him in October 1988. I may be eyeballing you now, Mike, but I'm trying to tell you that is a sign of transformation by everyone staying. Slang man, wagging, well, if I've been here. Okay?
Right on.
This guy here beside me, he was so converted he ran out, he wants the tape number.
Yeah.
Tape number 111. Oh, that was good. That was... Listen to him. Just
the Hour of Slack. You're listening to a portion from Dallas, Reverend Ivan Stang, the Church of the Subgenius, the man we've confronted here on the radio live, and the man who you've met face-to-face most recently.
One of the most important events besides my speech to the United Nations and to the Women's Auxiliary Club of Hoboken, Wisconsin, besides those two major events in 1980, was my slaying of Mr. Slack, Mr. Slackless Stang, mm-hmm. and bringing him to his feet and saying, Bob, come back to Dallas and show me the new voice, the new mode. And he did it to me. That's after my visit. Right. Now, Mike, I think Ken Perry here has... Perry went... He has some questions, unless we get some calls.
No, I just...
595-1655, baby, call.
Yeah, we got a couple more minutes to put some calls, more calls on the line. If you have a question for Bob, predictions for 1989. Otherwise, go to our listening audience. You, sir, in the black.
That's you.
Hey, I forgot.
Didn't you ever take any acting school, buddy? He always got to talk about his costume when he gets called on.
You have a question for Bob?
Actually, this is a prediction that was given to me by my father, the Prophet Harold. He says that John Hinckley is going to be released from the mental institution, and he's going to go out and he will assassinate Jodie Foster to prove his love to Ronald Reagan.
Well, that already happened. Well, wait a minute, what time zone are you on, what channel? See, a lot of these things happen, and your father just picks up on what did happen, but he thinks in his time frequency it's coming up in the future.
Well,
you got that Bruce Powell, you got that Mr. Arthur Croker. Okay, what? Go on.
No, that was pretty helpful.
Well, don't let me drown you out, baby. Come on. What? Okay, it already happened or did it?
No, it hasn't happened yet.
Okay, look. First of all, it's an erroneous prediction because it deals with known entities. Hinckley, Reagan, and Foster, right? All public archetypes. That is content. We want predictions. The church here wants predictions of formal analysis of the dynamics of anticipatory language, all right? Not on the content level. Like, for example, a real prediction would be, at what point does the computer sensibility flip and intermate with the McLean-Hunter empire? And it alters McLean's magazine and then affects the reaction from the TV mosaic cathode ray tube. Now, that's a prediction. When is that going to happen and what would be the effects to prove it did happen? All right? So you tell Prophet Harold to leave his church and join me. Join me in my challenge. My long march on the airwaves. The longest guest. Never before was there a revolution conducted by a guest on the any program. And I'm doing it. I'm a guest and I'm conducting a revolution while a guest. All right? Now, one thing that was amazingly synchronistically, I did not know the content of that Stang tape, but he got on there reminding our listeners to do the pledge. Now, isn't that post-synchronistic? I mean, we know we want these listeners to get in there and live to their pledge claims, right? And we've been asked to talk about it, and we did, but even Mr. Stang did it. I think that was quite a neat example of the magic that happens here at my slot.
And it's magic that people often overlook. Week by week, magic happens here every week, and 595-1655 if you have a call for Bob. We're winding down in the last few minutes, Bob.
We've got to come up with something, right?
What's going to happen to Gary Hart in 1989? That's the question that's on everyone's minds.
Oh, he'll start his campaign for president in 1992. And these guys have nothing to do but, you know, organize fundraising. He'll spend at least 12 months setting out policy programs for the big questions of 1992 to 1996. Certainly not something to be discussed. Again, we are not going to discuss archetypes of known quantities. We're dealing with the unfamiliar here, all right?
You know, a lot of people who listen to your show, who listen to your voice, know that you're familiar, you're well-versed with the works of Marshall McLuhan. I read recently that Marshall was sighted in a shopping plaza in New Jersey. Is it possible that he's still alive?
Well, he speaks through me every second Wednesday. Therefore, in the visual universe, in body semiotic body language of advertising in malls, yes, he would show up as some kind of dim reflection glimmering on the surface of my tongue. But certainly the electric tongue is molded by me with the help of all those subgeniuses before me. And one of those subgeniuses is Charles Cochran, a little-known professor at the U of T 40 years ago. Okay? All right. Now, Marsha McLuhan has been getting hit jobs like Brian Fawcett. There's a guy that is never going to survive Judgment Day. He did a review of Marsha McLuhan's Laws of the Media in the Global Mail last weekend, and he wrote a book called Cambodia, a book for those who find television too slow. The ignorance in that review will be accounted for. All right, it is awesome. It is, and he got paid for it, baby. Can you think of that? Can you even imagine that? So, Mr. Fawcett, you come on down and meet your maker, buddy. Marsha McLuhan is around. That's a damn challenge. I challenge anybody who dares say one more time in any form of expression that Marsha McLuhan said the Global Village would be a time of peace, a time of country village-like harmony, is uninformed, is just out to lunch. Marshall warned about the violence of the Global Village and in the Global Theater. He predicted the uprise of terrorism, and these kind of issues are just not going to be tolerated in the media as a way of dismissing Marshall. He never said that, Brian. Even his son knows that. Even Eric said that in a letter in 1980 to the Toronto Star, explained how the image of the Global Theater was not a pastoral image. That's Western Pink's Western man and those pinks thereof, they're a reflection of a rear-view mirror pre-industrial situation, which I think the electric environment evokes. No way. The electric environment is the most abusive and violent, soul-destroying. Every culture in the world, even the Indians, will suffer the devastating disservices of the electric environment. That having the discarnate state so long is something that 1989 may not even be able to handle. We just may not have a 1989 under these electric conditions. And so it comes full circle, Mr. Fawcett. You reread Hot and Cool by Gerald Stern, a book on Marsha McLuhan, and you read the interview at the end where Marshall explains the Global Village is a time of fission, not fusion. You guys just don't know your stuff. And I don't like to hijack the airwaves.
Okay,
for
okay.
Personal
prejudice. Cut you off.
Cut me off. But he's been forewarned.
But we'll acknowledge that this is an open forum for citations, questions, answers. And we've done this before in the past. And we'll continue to do it. And I welcome any inquiries and libel suits to be directed towards me every other Wednesday.
Yes, Subob, whatever he is. And don't forget, let's make an acknowledgement of the greatest historian of the American century, Mae Brussel, passed away this year. Let's have a little 1/3 inch of silence. That's enough. Let's not talk about any other holy offices right now. Just Marsha McLuhan and Mae Brussel today.
We've got time to squeeze in possibly one more question about 1989, or in fact 1988. I know the lights have gone on, but then they've been shut down when they hear you talk, and so I think
you can call in.
For those people who are calling, don't be shy. We welcome this as a forum. You'll be back in 2 weeks.
Back on the 2-week cycle. Yeah. The holiday season's over as of tonight.
So no more specials.
No way. No more. It's too exhausting.
Specials with the family.
I can't come up with stuff that quick.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate you coming down there for the last 3 weeks solidly, and we've had a lot of good calls, a lot of good questions. I hope some people have been satisfied with the answers. And, as I say, if you want to squeeze in a quick call, 595-1655.
I think, Mike, we could. You remember what you're going to say, but I say I think that you will probably reach full subgeniushood in '89, Mike. I mean, you've just done incredible work this year.
I'm flattered. Thank you, Bob. I hope so. I'm feeling a lot of slack these days. I think mostly because I'm unemployed, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
Well, that's the right route.
To be slack, and yet those people around me who aren't unemployed, who haven't reached slack, I really see now how pink they really are, for their pinkness.
Well, don't mistake leisure for freedom. That's the main point of having slack during an unemployment period.
Yeah.
You can be more involved and more workful energy like while in this state you're in now, Mike, than you could ever be when fully employed. Mm-hmm. And we're just not getting those calls, saying there's nothing coming in.
Not tonight. It's the holiday season. I guess a lot of people are away, and they may be at their parents' home.
I think they're listening, and then they get caught listening, and they hang up.
Oh, there's the phone.
Oh, okay,
now.
Good. Let's take this one. What is this? The last question, 1988, baby?
Last call, 1988.
Mr.
And,
Fawcett?
I hope it's a good call.
I hope it's Brian Fawcett.
Hi, C. Carolyn.
Hi, this is directed that nobody, but will we break out of pink dichotomy dogma in 89?
Yes, we will.
No longer will be a reference point?
That's right. There'll be nothing to... There'll be no semiotic signposts anymore.
Is this a co-optation or a mutation?
All four.
All right.
Okay. Hey, that's great. Okay.
That was a very
nice
good question. That
nice
boy, he just won $1 million.
Well,
it was not announced, and you got good karma,
well,
buddy.
There you are. You see, if someone else would call, they would win $1 million. We'll do this again probably next year. But Bob has infinite wealth. So we can do this.
Many files.
Thank you, Bob, for making it a great year. It's been a fun year. Oh, another phone call.
Let's okay.
I just want to get my
Oh, don't tell me the list. Check bounced.
Hi, C.K. Allen.
Calling in.
Oh, hi, Sri.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Do you have a question for Bob?
I don't know. I think he's answered all my questions. I just wanted to say hi.
Oh, okay.
I have something to say to Sri.
Okay.
Sri, how's the song on Poltergeist coming along?
Oh, the new dictator? Poltergeist, the new dictator?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's coming along quite well.
Good,
because
remember, I get credit in some form for that.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's going to be hit signal by about 1990. Good phrase, good phrase. Sneak in, see, because we plumb the secret songs of the universe here at the church. That's our job, plumbing acoustic space with tactile bias. I'd like to tell you in 89.3, I'm going to explain why I'm the greatest musician alive today and how music, at best, is so obsolete, it's sickening, it causes poisonous. Matter of fact, I think it's the root cause of acid rain, baby. So watch out for the real music from Bob. Tactility, Sri, that's what it's about. Tactility. Thanks a lot, sir.
Bye. Okay.
Oh, they're just rolling in. Is another one going? Is he going to get another?
No, I think that's about it.
Yeah, Mike's got a cassette to play, I think.
Well, no, I mean, no more than usual, but I think, yeah, let's wrap things up.
George just can't keep taping this, you know. I mean, George's got to go to work tomorrow. He just can't keep taping and taping.
No, this is draw. thanks for a great year, and the different format, the format change, which came in, I guess, April, May.
Yeah, it started in June, last June 29th. It was the midnight show.
Yeah, and I think it's worked out well, so...
Well, there's no doubt, Mike, I love you.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, and Kent, he's not bad.
Kent, we're working on
it. But he's new.
So thanks to Bob and Pent Perry for hanging around. Kent Perry will be in at 2 o'clock to do his regular show. And myself, Michael Dyer, I guess we'll just play some more boring old music and noise, and I'll read from the back of cassette labels for the next hour or so, and then Kent will be in.
Oh,
do you want to go out on any messages, Bob?
Cassettes rule, okay, but not, that's not one I'm going out on. Let me see. Heaven. Diane Keaton made a movie about heaven. Heaven's an invisible environment. There is so much confusion in that movie about what heaven is. It shows you any invisible environment creates a response of the users as content to describe it, and they have a million points of view of what heaven is. Heaven's an invisible environment, so is Bob.
But what it comes right down to is heaven is right here every other Wednesday.
See, just another opinion.
Yeah.
Heaven is Bob. Every second Wednesday, you can have a piece.
Praise Bob.
Who shot the Pope?
Elements of our military, ours meaning America's, military and intelligence services, put together initially and ostensibly for the purpose of defending America from foreign invasion or any kind of hostile threat from abroad, have in fact arrogated to themselves the total power of this society. They decided that they knew better than the democratic authorities in this country what was going on, and that they would eliminate anyone who got in their way. Some of the people who have gotten in their way were John and Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and at this point, several thousand other people of less sane than those others.
Because something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you?
Find out who shot the Pope with Dave Emery and Nip Tuck every second Sunday morning at 10 on 88.1 CKLN.